This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The day's wrap of top business stories. Power Business.
Power Business with Kaya Sitole. Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. and Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m.
Welcome back to the Monday evening edition of Power Business. My name is Kaya Sitole, here with you until 8 p.m. We've just spoken to the Commissioner of SARS, Mr. Edward Kizveta, who gave us some warnings about how to conduct ourselves during the current filing season. And I think obviously for a lot of people that have been working from home over the past year, the question of how to then claim for those expenses associated with using your own personal resources, whether it's electricity, whether it's data, how you can claim from SARS is an important one. However, as we heard from what has already been documented by SARS, people who do claim tend to attract an audit, and that means that every single document relating to those expenses needs to be in order. Otherwise, SARS will simply reject it. So please do make sure that you get your documentation in order before you then say, I'd like to claim for my home expenses. Speaking of what an extraordinary year it has been, we know that last year during hard lockdowns, the question of how to assist people navigate through the pandemic was partly relieved through this COVID-19 grants that we saw in different forms, whether it was through the TERS system or whether it was through the 350 Rand grant. It disappeared at some point in time. However, a couple of weeks ago, the president then took us back to the same conditions that existed when the grants were being paid, but the grants themselves are not being paid. We are now joined on the line by Tim Koller from the University of Cape Town Development Policy and Research Unit. Tim, a year ago, level 5, level 4, gridlock in the economy, it warrants people getting some form of assistance. They got it. Here we are, back in the same conditions, level 4 lockdown. The assistance is not there. How do we deal with that?
Even Kaya, yes, thank you for having me. Yeah, so just to add some context, just before the onset of the pandemic in South Africa, we had a relatively far-reaching and comprehensive social assistance, specifically social grant system, which primarily empowered children, the disabled and elderly in low-income households. However, it can be said that the system presumed prime-aged, able-bodied individuals would be able to support themselves through the labor market, right, through getting a job and earning an income there. However, obviously, such a view neglects the widespread structural unemployment which plagues the country. And through the introduction of the new special COVID-19 social relief of distress grant, we know that this hole in the country's social safety net was partially addressed through it. And it served as a core component, obviously, of the government's expansion of social protection in response to the pandemic. And this grant is distinct in its position in the system, given that it's the first grant in South Africa, at least in the post-apartheid period, which specifically targets unemployed adults. By the end of last year, it brought in millions of these individuals into the system in a short amount of time. Specifically, by the end of 2020, about 6 million previously unreached people brought into the system, which exceeds the growth of the system in the last 10 years at a cost of nearly 20 billion rand to the state.
And that ability to stretch the coverage much wider is something that definitely would have happened in the absence of a pandemic. Did we then see the benefits of it? Because obviously people are always going to say it costs too much. But for somebody who up until now was not able to access a grant because they are at a healthy working age, they don't have a disability, to then receive this amount and be the reason you're able to put a CV together, that does make a difference, does it not?
Absolutely. And we see it in the research. Now, a number of researchers have conducted analyses throughout the lockdown period with a lot of focus on this grant, given its distinct target group. And given that the grant targets a separate group of individuals compared to pre-existing grants, it would be plausible to expect that any sort of effects that we see, for instance, does the grant encourage or deter job-seeking behavior? We'd expect that effects might differ given this distinct target group. So in our new research, what we find specifically is that we, in addition to showing the grant has brought in millions of previously unreached adults into the system, confirming SASSA reports, these individuals are mostly chronically unemployed young men. And we find that the grant was relatively well targeted, with close to about 3 in every 5 recipients being non-employed, and the remainder that are employed, although against the eligibility criteria of the grant, are employed in the informal sector, which is a key target group that government also tried to provide support to. We also find that not only did the grant reach a large number of people, but application for and receipt of the grant was very pro-poor, very progressive, exhibiting similar levels of progressivity to the child support grant, which is the other largest grant in the system. And in addition to that, researchers have also found that the grant had substantial poverty and inequality reducing effects. Specifically, in absence of the grant, we estimate that poverty by the lowest poverty line, the food poverty line, would have been over 5% higher in absence of the grant, and household income inequality between 1 and 6% higher, depending on the measure. Now, in addition to these striking findings, we also provide what we know to be the first causal evidence of receipt of the grant on labor market outcomes, which is a common concern amongst the general public and also policymakers. We want to know, well, do grants discourage work-seeking behavior? And we specifically find that receipt of the grant increased the likelihood of looking for a job by a staggering 25 percentage points. So this suggests that the COVID-19 grant indeed played a really important role in reducing labor market inactivity by enabling participation, so arguably ultimately aiding the recovery of the labor market.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we then go back to conversations that predated COVID around the question of the basic income grant, it always used to get killed at the point of how much, what is the right amount. But I think what we're seeing here is that even a small amount can make some particular difference. So perhaps the conversations around the basic income grant are not stillborn after all.
Absolutely. And conversations around a basic income grant, as I'm sure you know, have been going on for more than 20 years now, since the onset of democracy in South Africa. And of course, this research, in addition to the host of other papers that have been conducted during the lockdown and pandemic in South Africa, have serious implications for policymaking, specifically with reference to extending the grant. Of course, any consideration for further support ought to consider the changing dynamics of the labor market and the fiscal space in the economy. But we've seen that the labor market has, of course, only partially recovered. We're still 1.4 million fewer people employed in the economy. And in addition to this, the recovery has been uneven. We see that the number of job seekers has returned to pre-pandemic levels, but employment is still significantly lower, as I previously said, and the number of people who are economically inactive, which includes those who would, in usual circumstances, be looking for a job but aren't now, is still significantly higher. So our evidence, what we've collected here, suggests that this grant has been an important means of providing progressive income relief to both the unemployed and informally employed. And it's ultimately enabled the recovery of the labor market, at least in part, by combating inactivity, by increasing the likelihood of someone participating in the labor market. So depending on the fiscus and the trajectory of the pandemic and the labor market in the future, we urge policymakers to consider further extending the availability of the grant, especially given the recent restrictions. And such an extension could either be short-term or long-term. It can be conditional on the recovery of the labor market, or made as a permanent feature of the country's social assistance system to fill this gaping hole in the safety net and provide regular support to the chronically unemployed.
One of the big problems that emerged last year was a question of overlaps, particularly if you're a primary caregiver who had never been, receiving a grant in your own capacity, but you also happen to be unemployed. Then the question as well, are you receiving? Are you double dipping? Has that been resolved? Do we now know what it is, the best way to go forward?
Yeah, so the research has shown that, in essence, should the grant be considered for an extension, the eligibility criteria ought to be amended. As you allude to, one of the key eligibility criteria for the COVID grant is that existing grant recipients are not eligible to receive support. And that is because the grant specifically targets or tries to target individuals, unemployed individuals, who are receiving no other form of support. So it's been argued that the eligibility criteria should be slightly amended, not to allow all other social grant recipients to additionally receive this grant, but specifically allow caregivers of who receive the child support grant the largest grant in the system, on behalf of their children. Now, although the child support grant last year was temporarily expanded in its amount for a period of 6 months, it ceased in October. And that support was specifically targeted as a means to provide income relief to children to ensure that they receive the adequate resources for their upbringing, not necessarily support for the primary caregivers themselves. So it's been argued that if the grant ought to be extended, in addition to an extension, the eligibility criteria ought to be amended to allow primary caregivers to concurrently hold the child support grant alongside the COVID grant as a means of supporting themselves.
It's all good for us to deliberate on these matters. Are the people that make the decisions listening?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
The people that have to make the decisions, are they listening to this research?
We would hope so. We have, in addition to this research and the research that we've released alongside the NIDSCRAM studies, we've received a lot of really encouraging engagement from policymakers, not just with respect to social grant policy, but social protection policy as a whole. For instance, considerations with regards to extending the TERS policy. As of this moment, there's of course been no public confirmation of an extension of any of these policies, but given the recent level 4 regulations, we're hoping for some substantial income relief policy to be announced.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see what happens, because clearly the longer we remain in lockdown mode, the more desperate these individuals will be for some form of assistance. And we hope that those that are responsible for making this call are listening. It's time for the latest Power News with Thomas White.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.